Hello and welcome to part three of our thyroid assessment module. We're going to talk today about using assessments that you've been going through to find and correct imbalances. So we've been talking about in the previous parts of the thyroid assessment module about how to look for the imbalances, both symptomatically and physically and in the labs. And now we're going to tie it all together and just go through a little bit more detail and kind of a review of how to put it all into action. So before we begin, I want to make sure that you're aware, as usual, that this information is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified medical practitioner or health practitioner, and it's not medical advice. What we're doing is educating our patients, our clients, about how their bodies work, what the labs are saying about how their bodies work, and then what kind of things that we can suggest that they think about putting into action to try to restore balance. Let's just take a few minutes to summarize what we've been doing in our first two parts of the module. We've been looking at how do we assess the thyroid gland, and see how it's functioning. So we look at signs and symptoms through a questionnaire, talking to the person about their history, their health history, their family history, and their medication use. Looking at physical exam signs, those things on the body, and we taught you how to do a physical exam remotely and how you can ask them to do their own self physical exam at home. We talked about temperature testing, the Barnes method and the Wilson method. And finally, we talked about labs. So it's not just about getting a lab, although some of the sample cases I've shown you, I'm just looking at the labs and not really doing the rest of it. But in reality, what we're going to be doing is the whole picture and really pulling it all together. And then it makes sense what we see in the labs usually. So let's just start with a review of the thyroid lab analysis. We went through this in an overview, and then we went through this in much more detail, what the TSH is, the total T4, the total T3, and then the free T4 and free T3. And we also talked about patterns that might exist where if a person has relatively high whole total T4 or total T3 compared to the free T4 or free T3, then they may have too much of the thyroid binding globulin. And we also talked about how if they have relatively too much T4 compared to T3, that they may have a thyroid underconversion. We also talked about antibodies and how vitally important it is to measure antibodies. Most doctors miss this, and they miss the opportunity to detect antibodies before they become a big problem. We talked about the thyroid peroxidase and the antithyroglobulin, and there's also another one called thyroid stimulating immunoglobulin. That's usually measured very rarely, but it's measured when there's a suspicion of Graves' disease. We talked about reverse T3 and how the ratio between the free T3 and the reverse T3 needs to be 20 or more, because otherwise there's too much reverse T3, which means that there's an issue with the iodinase enzyme. And when we have that problem, we want to look at why. What are some of the things that interfere with it, whether it's a deficiency of selenium or whether it's too much cytokines from inflammation, too much cortisol, too little cortisol, etc. Then we talked about thyroid binding globulin, which is the protein that carries around the inactive forms of the hormone, and then it gets released. And if we have too much of that thyroid binding globulin, as is what happens when women are on the pill or taking exogenous estrogen or taking too many xenoestrogens and their estrogen levels go high, they end up with too much thyroid binding globulin. Then we also talked about two other things that are important, one being vitamin D. Vitamin D is super critical for any kind of membrane integrity, the integrity of the gut-brain barrier, the integrity of the gut lining, in terms of the immune system, and in terms of thyroid hormone production. And then, of course, we looked at the iodine load test because iodine is a critical factor in looking at thyroid labs. We reviewed in the last about the foundational thyroid support, all the ways that we have to start with. A lot of times we just, you know, we want to get sexy with our protocols. We want to get in there and find that really cool herb or that combination. But in reality, we've got to go to the foundational support in order to get the thyroid imbalance. And sometimes you can get most of the labs to clear up by just applying the foundational principles before getting to some fancy schmancy protocol with supplements and herbs and all that. avoiding the toxic exposures, decreasing managing stress, optimizing digestion, balancing blood sugar, supporting adrenals, getting good quality sleep, gentle, not over-exercising, but not too little, eating whole foods, antioxidant-rich diet, drinking thyroid-balancing elixirs if possible, adding key nutrients and herbs, fresh air and sunshine, and having fun. And we need to be doing these things. So don't jump right in when a person comes in and says, oh, I've got fatigue and I've been diagnosed with hypothyroid and I'm looking for a natural solution. A lot of people will jump right in and just get to work with the thyroid and start measuring the thyroid. But if their blood sugar is out of balance, if their gut microbiome's a mess, if they're stressed to the max with their adrenals, they're not sleeping, they're over-exercising, not exercising enough, eating poor quality food, there's no way their thyroid is going to get better no matter how many good herbs and nutrients you throw at it. So just remember, always go back to foundational support. So we talked about the specific patterns that you can actually identify with your labs, and we showed you a chart which you have on your page where you can download it and keep it out in front of you and use it until you have it memorized, which you may never have, and figure out what kind of problem they're having. Is it primary hypothyroid, a pituitary and hypothalamic hypothyroid? Is it autoimmune? Is it an underconversion issue, an overconversion issue, excess thyroid binding globulin, increased thyroid binding globulin, or a pattern that doesn't show up on lab at all but needs to be addressed for everybody, which is thyroid receptor resistance? So we're going to start with thyroid receptor resistance. So when you, of course, looking at the basics, looking at the foundations, but we want to look for thyroid resistance in everybody. And we want to make sure that no matter what pattern you've identified, you also work with them to make sure the factors that trigger thyroid resistance are under control. So this is for everybody, no matter what pattern they're in, thyroid resistance. So what causes thyroid resistance? Well, too much cortisol. High cortisol levels can damage the thyroid receptors. High homocysteine, which can come from a deficiency of vitamin B6, B12, or folate. A vitamin A deficiency, a zinc deficiency, and inflammation, those inflammatory cytokines that are produced by the body, can damage the thyroid receptors. What do the labs tell you about thyroid resistance? Nothing. Everything looks normal. Now, there may be other things out of balance as well when there's a coexisting condition like an underconversion or primary hypothyroid. But in general, you can have somebody with totally normal labs and they still have thyroid symptoms. Okay, it's not the thyroid's fault, it's the receptors. So a lot of people are barking up the wrong tree, looking in the wrong place, and trying to fix things at the level of the thyroid when the fixing doesn't happen there. It needs to happen at the level of the receptors. And so what do you do to support somebody in thyroid resistance? And what should you be doing for everybody that comes in to make sure, or checking out at least to make sure they don't have this? Adrenal support, stress management, B vitamins, especially B6, 12, and folate, and vitamin A and zinc. These are all going to help to get those thyroid receptors in shape. So super important. Do not overlook this. This is where you need to start with all your thyroid people. So let's take a look at primary hypothyroidism. So each of these pages will have the causes, the labs you're going to see, and then the nutritional support that you're going to put in place. So I would highly recommend that you print these out, or you can use the chart, which has a summary of the nutritional support as well. So the causes of primary hypothyroid, it could be damage to the thyroid from radiation or environmental exposures. The thyroid just can't produce enough hormone. It could be exposure to chemicals in the environment of the halide family. Fluoride, bromine, and chlorine. These interfere with iodine and the uptake and utilization at the cell level of iodine. Medications, and we've given you a whole list of medications that interfere and can damage the thyroid's ability to make its hormone. Infections can affect the thyroid. We can have a temporary hyper or hypothyroid, an autoimmune-like condition from an infection. Insufficient nutrients needed to make the hormone. Well, what are they? Well, of course we need iodine because it's part of it. Of course we need tyrosine because it's part of the thyroglobulin, which is the core of the thyroid. But there's others that are needed. There's iodine, there's zinc, there's magnesium, there's B vitamins. everything that's required to make the thyroid hormone. So what do we see on labs in a primary hypothyroidism? Well, we see high TSH, and the T4 and the T3 can be low or normal. But the pituitary is working really hard to try to get the thyroid to produce, and the thyroid is just not doing what it should. What kind of nutritional support? Iodine. You want to always test the iodine before you start supplementing, unless you're just doing microgram doses, because the iodine in excess can actually trigger an autoimmune response. You have to have enough protein that contains tyrosine, so the amino acid tyrosine is super important. You need zinc, selenium, copper, magnesium. Those are minerals that are needed. You need to make sure that they have enough vitamins A, C, D, and E. Antioxidants, glutathione, superoxide dismutase, catalase, those sorts of things. Vitamin B2, riboflavin is super important for the making of thyroid hormone. So sometimes that's a big issue for folks, especially if they're drinking alcohol, which depletes their vitamins, their B vitamins, especially B1 and B2. And then it's really important to have good omega-3-6 balance. So you can see that a lot of these things are actually things that you're going to cover and help when you apply the foundational principles. So it's really nice the way it all works together. So what do we do? How do we identify? And what do we do for pituitary and hypothalamic hypothyroidism? So what this means is that the thyroid's fine. It's got perfectly good capacity, but the pituitary isn't producing enough hormone, TSH, to stimulate it. And it could be it's doing that because the hypothalamus isn't detecting that there it's needed and isn't stimulating the pituitary. So it's up in the head, right? This is where it's all in the head. So what causes this? Well, stress does. Stress really puts a strain on the HPAT axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal thyroid axis. And so if there's a lot of stress going on, we're going to see the pituitary struggling to make enough of its other hormones. Postpartum is very common to have problems here. We very commonly see that the pituitary gets weaker after pregnancy. Maybe shut down from over-medication. If you've got somebody who's been on thyroid medication for many years, decades for some of them, their pituitary basically stops because there's exogenous, meaning from the outside, thyroid hormone in the blood. And the pituitary goes, oh, we're good. We don't have to make any. Okay, we're good. And so it stops stimulating the thyroid at all. And so if the thyroid was sluggish to begin with, it gets more sluggish the more years somebody is on medication because it's not getting stimulated to do stuff and it just gets lazy. It just stops working. Neurotransmitter imbalances can create this pituitary hypothalamic hypothyroidism, especially dopamine and serotonin. And then tumors. Adenomas in the pituitary are not uncommon. They're not. I wouldn't say they're common, but they're not uncommon. And that's something that needs to be investigated whenever there's excess or too little pituitary hormone. So what labs do we look at? How do we see that? Well, it's the TSH is going to be low or normal, and the T4 is going to be low. So if you've got somebody with low T4, we're expecting to see the TSH to be high because the pituitary needs to be reading that and going, come on, thyroid, come on, you can do this, you can do this. So whenever we see a low T4, we're going to be looking to see is the TSH high and compensatory. And if it's not, then we're suspicious that it might be pituitary hypothalamic hypothyroidism. So what kind of things have been found to support this? Well, it depends on the cause, right? If it's medication, you want to stop the medication and you want to support the liver in getting rid of that and detoxing from it. If it's neurotransmitter imbalances, we want to support it with good amounts of the amino acids and everything that they need. So what do we need here? So sage leaf has been found to be helpful. L-arginine has been helpful. It's an amino acid. Zinc, magnesium, and manganese, three of the minerals. Phosphatidylserine, and phosphatidylserine is very helpful for brain and restoration of brain after long periods of stress. We use it a lot in adrenal stage one. Antioxidants. Antioxidants help just about everything because they help to repair and restore the viability of tissue. The B vitamins, and then two amino acids, tyrosine and 5-HTP, to help with the production of dopamine and serotonin. So these are what you're going to be looking at. Now, this is not formula. So I just don't want you to take these things as saying this is formula. You're going to be looking at each person as an individual and figuring out what all the factors are and coming up with a program that works for them. You're not going to necessarily put somebody on this many supplementation pieces because it gets overwhelming. So you're going to use this and educate yourself so that you can make the right choices and help people make the right choices. So let's jump into the autoimmune. 80% of all hypothyroidism is autoimmune. It's named in a diagnosis world Hashimoto's. Generally speaking, I don't tell somebody that they have Hashimoto's, and you shouldn't either unless you are an MD or an naturopath that's licensed to be able to tell somebody that. But it's not a good idea to tell somebody the name of a disease you think they have. That's called diagnosing, and you can get in trouble for that. But you can say there is autoimmune activity happening. They may say, do I have Hashimoto's? And I will say, I don't like to name diseases. I'm just telling you the process that's underlying it. And let's get to work together so that we can help your body restore balance here so it doesn't continue to attack itself. So what causes it? What causes autoimmune hypothyroid is what causes lupus and Crohn's and rheumatoid arthritis and Sjogren's and a host of other autoimmune diseases. Leaky gut. Everybody that has a problem with an autoimmune disease most likely has a leaky gut. Heavy metals are often a problem as well. Food allergies. Food allergens get into the bloodstream. They attack. And there's a lot of drive-by shootings, let's just say, that happen. Gluten and dairy, very common amongst the allergens that cause problems in autoimmune. Stress. Stress is big. Trauma, infection. Insulin resistance can contribute to the development of Hashimoto's and pregnancy. It oftentimes gets aggravated in pregnancy, and people don't even know they have it until they get pregnant and their hormones start to go crazy. So what labs do we do and what do they look like? Well, the TSH can be either high or normal. The T4 can be low or normal. So it kind of presents like a hypothyroid, a primary hypothyroidism, with the presence of elevated antibodies. It can be TPO, which is thyroid peroxidase, and or antithyroglobulin. It can be one or the other. It could be both. It's said that about 80% of all people with autoimmune thyroiditis actually have TPO elevated. So in a lot of cases, I don't do the antithyroglobulin if somebody's really concerned about saving money. But if the TPO doesn't come back positive, they may be in that other 80% that just has the antithyroglobulin. Most people opt to do both and usually can get them as a package through the lab. Let's just go a little deeper with Hashimoto's or autoimmune. So the nutritional approach is you've got to get their blood sugar balanced. Absolutely have to. I've seen people do so much and their blood sugar is still all over the map. And they're eating great. They're eating superfood, but they're just not eating the right food for them. And it's causing them to have blood sugar spikes. Repair gut. Super important to repair gut. Leaky gut repair work. Manage and transform stress, whatever techniques you use for that. Support the adrenals. What kind of herbs and nutrients does the adrenal need? Plus, what about sleep? What about cutting back on exercise? What about doing meditation, yoga, heart math, and other things? Get rid of heavy metals if that's an issue, but be careful with getting rid of heavy metals that they're in a good state for it. Clean up their environment. Toxins can contribute to this as well. Nutrient deficiencies, we have to do that. Identify their deficiencies and then support their immune system cells. There's some work that you can look more deeply into. In Dr. Karazian's book, he talks a lot about balancing the T cells, the TH1s and the TH2. And he gives you a list, and we have that in the thyroid balancing document for you to take a look at if you want to. Like if somebody gets stimulated by things that increase TH1, T helper 1, then they are probably in a TH1 dominant. You don't want to give them the things that stimulate TH1. We want to give them the things that stimulate TH2. And we go into this a lot more detail in the thyroid mastery part. Here are some nutrients. These are good things for you to know. Again, we do go into more detail on this in the thyroid mastery. Vitamin D, B complex, A, C, E, selenium, zinc. Iodine is controversial in Hashimoto's. Some people have a deficiency and they need a lot of extra iodine. Some people have an excess and they need to avoid it. There's some popular speakers that are saying everybody should avoid iodine when they have Hashimoto's. But the truth of the matter is, if you avoid iodine, you can't make thyroid hormone. Iodine is also important for protecting breast tissue. It helps to decrease fibrosity and also uterine fibroids. And it's also important for pancreatic function. So you can't just say, oh, this iodine is bad for everybody, take it out, because it's an essential nutrient and we cannot make thyroid hormone without it. Another one that's really good, glutathione, liposomal IV cream or precursors. Glutathione does not work well in the standard form to take it orally, but there are liposomal forms that you can take, or IVs, obviously expensive and you have to have somebody willing to do it. Cream and precursors, meaning the things that body uses to make it, like N-acetylcysteine. Superoxide dismutase, very important antioxidant as well, and we see this low in a lot of people with Hashimoto's. Essential fatty acids, CoQ10, Romania. I love Romania root. It's just this really nice little, almost like these little discs that you can get, and you can chomp on them or soak them and put them in teas and things like that. And it's really supportive, not just for the thyroid, but also for the adrenals. And there is a couple of studies that show that people put on CoQ10 with Romania, we're seeing decreases in their antibodies within the course of 6 weeks, and selenium as well, about 400 micrograms a day of selenium. Okay, and then whatever nutrients, if they're in a TH2, TH1 imbalance. Some of the herbs that work real well, mushrooms, Romania, ashwagandha helps to convert T4 to T3, schizandra berry helps to increase glutathione, blue flag helps to detoxify the thyroid, and Eleutherococcus can support stress. So all of these things are super important, not necessarily directly working on the immune system, but all indirectly working on it. So let's move on to thyroid underconversion. Remember, that's when we have plenty of T4 but not enough T3 because the body's not converting it. Oftentimes, not always, but usually, when that's happening, the body's producing more reverse T3, so we'll see elevations. But it's very common to not see elevations in reverse T3, even though the T3 is low, because we're just not converting it and it doesn't go either way. So there's an enzyme called the 5' deiodinase enzyme, and that is what needs to take an iodine off of T4 to make it into T3. And if that enzyme isn't working properly, or the 5-deiodinase enzyme, which takes a different one of those iodines off and puts it into reverse T3. They're very, very similar, T3 and reverse T3. It's just the position of the iodine that's been removed. So what causes it? Well, the body, in its infinite wisdom, when it's sick or immune challenged or under a lot of stress, it's going to naturally want to slow down the metabolism, so it produces less T3 to do that. So really, to get to the root, we want to look at what's that underlying reason that the body's not producing. And then inflammation, interleukin 6 is very damaging to that iodinase enzyme. Blood sugar imbalances. Long-term fasting, not intermittent fasting, not short fast, but long-term fasting causes an underconversion because the body's trying to conserve. It's just a survival mechanism. Various toxins affect it. But here's the other thing. Most of that conversion doesn't happen in the thyroid. It happens in the liver and the gut. About 50% in general is happening in the liver, about 25% in the gut, and then the other rest of it around the rest of the body, including thyroid. About 10% happens at the thyroid level. So that's why impaired liver function and kidney function can have an effect. Also, gut function, impaired gut function. And then, of course, heavy metals can interfere, so mercury and lead, big time. So what do we see on labs? Well, we see normal TSH usually. We see a normal T4, but we see a low T3, right? So they're off scale. And we taught you, we gave you the rind chart that you can use to plot them so you can see if they're not lined up straight down a line, which direction they go. So if the T4 is high and the T3 is low, it's an underconversion. So here's some additional support that you can put into practice: selenium, zinc, vitamin D, iron, iodine, vitamins B6 and 12, copper, ashwagandha. Get the blood sugar balanced, and that might require some chromium, magnesium, DHA, and then keep the stress down. So that's how we handle it. And again, you're putting together a protocol not for a condition, but for a person. And so this is just a guideline to help you in doing that. Increased thyroid binding globulin. That means that there's more than there should be of the hormone that carries the thyroid around the system. What that means is that we're going to get the ratio of the total hormone to the free hormone is going to be a lot higher than we expect. What causes it? Excess estrogen is one of the most common causes. So it could be in birth control pills, it could be during pregnancy, it could be in menopause, taking bioidentical hormone replacement, it could be from the xenoestrogens that people are getting from their food and from their plastic bags and from leaving their water bottles in the car and from their dental amalgams. It could also be from too much phytoestrogens, which are plant estrogens, for people who are just chowing down and loading up on soy. I am not anti-soy, for the record. I think soy as a fermented food or as a fresh food can be very helpful in, you know, small amounts, but a lot of people think if a little is good, more is better. And they're just getting on these massive doses of soy protein and the isolated genistein and all this sort of stuff. And that could create an excess estrogen situation, which can affect the thyroid. What do the labs look like? Well, the TSH is normal. The total T4 and the total T3 are normal, but the free T3 and the free T4 are going to be low, because there's too much of this binding globulin and not enough is being released to become activated. Things that have been shown to be helpful in supporting this: MSM, trimethylglycine, choline, beets, betaine hydrochloric acid, vitamin C, taurine, liver support, and phosphatidylcholine. Doesn't mean you need to give everybody, just like take this as a recipe and give them this stuff. No, it's a matter of finding out what other things are going on so that you know what the best approach might be. What's thyroid overconversion and decreased thyroid binding globulin? And I lumped them together because, first of all, we don't see them all that often, but they have the same underlying causes, similar presentations, and similar nutritional approaches. So when we overconvert from T4 to T3, meaning that the T3 is much higher than it should be given the amount of T4 the body's making, you run the risk of receptor burnout because there's too much T3. And too much T3 can burn out the receptors. What causes it? Well, the things that we see are increased testosterone, insulin resistance and diabetes, which can lead to increased testosterone, and PCOS and stress, okay, for both. So overconversion means too much T4 is going to T3. Decreased thyroid binding globulin means that you're going to have a high relative total thyroid hormone, T4 or T3, compared to their free hormones, right? There's not enough of the thyroid binding globulin, so we have a lot of this free floating around, and we're going to get a lot of stimulation. We might see some symptoms of hyperthyroid, of jitteriness, of palpitations and sweating and all that. So what do we do for nutritional support? Very, very good stuff is insulin resistance diet. Get them on a low glycemic diet that supports them, that gets their hemoglobin A1C in check and gets them balanced. A detoxification program for liver, selenium, and then the herb Googaloo. Also, antioxidants and phosphatidylserine have been shown to be quite helpful in getting this under control. And we come full circle back to, and what if everything looks normal, but they still have symptoms? Are you going to send them on their way, send them to a shrink, tell them they need Prozac, or are you going to do what a good functional medicine practitioner should do? Is look for the causes of thyroid resistance and help them to put plans in place to correct. High cortisol causes it, high homocysteine, deficiencies of vitamin A or zinc, and inflammation. Those are the main causes. Everything looks normal on the lab, like we said, but you got to get them under control. You've got to get them adrenal support and stress management. Get them on the good B vitamins to lower that homocysteine, B6, B12, and folate, vitamin A, especially if they have the BCM01 SNP, which is a genetic polymorphism that will interfere with the conversion from beta carotene to vitamin A, and so they may have a vitamin A deficiency. and finally zinc. So that's the story of how to do the specific pattern approach to what you do when you get all these labs and these assessments back. So in summary, the way that we assess the thyroid is we look at the signs and symptoms. My favorite way is a questionnaire, a scorecard, so to speak. Looking at their history and their medication use, looking at their physical exam signs, looking at their temperatures, having them track them, and doing labs. The thing about the labs is you're not going to spend the money or get them to go to the lab and get blood drawn very often, but you can do the physical signs and the temperature and the questionnaires regularly. And that's what I recommend that you do. So in balancing, right, we're going to review the step-by-step process. Step one is use the chart to record the results of your lab tests. I'll show you this one more time, but it's on your page. Circle or highlight L for low, H for high, and N for normal. And then look to see what you're seeing in terms of pattern and determine which pattern or patterns they're most exhibiting. It's possible to have a combination. Find the pattern on the nutrition chart. Help to make the appropriate changes to diet and lifestyle and begin with a few of the major herbs and supplements to support the thyroid. This is after you've done the core basics. Remember the foundational basics we started this presentation with. You want to reevaluate based on a symptom survey and temperature within a month to 6 weeks, right? Because it's cheap, it's free. And if no changes are noticed, consider additional supplements, upping the doses, kind of rearranging, asking them, are they really doing their stress management? Sometimes when they do a bunch of stuff for a month to 6 weeks and they don't see results, they realize that they could be doing better. And step six is to rerun the labs in 3 to 6 months and then adjust the plan as indicated. That's the piece that a lot of people miss too. They just put somebody on a protocol and they go on their merry way and they don't get readjusted. This is not something that's very specific and easy to nail on the first try. Different doses, different combinations for different people, different lifestyle habits, foods, etc. are going to be needed to get them in balance. So it's really important to go back and recheck. And 3 to 6 months is a good time, usually 6 months, closer to 6 months for the labs, unless they have a very flexible health plan or they don't mind spending the money and going to the lab. So here's the chart that you're going to be using to fill in from the lab tests. And we have a review of the possible causes down below. We went through this in detail in part two. Here's the specific nutrition chart. Again, I've taken a lot of the nutrients that I've got listed for each of the individual patterns, whichever way works better for you. Personally, I'd like to have both printed out and in my little handy-dandy folder that I use for reference when I'm looking through people's labs and helping them put together a plan. And so this is a really nice nutrition chart. And then the reassessment, take the symptom surveys and the temperatures at 4 to 6 weeks. If the vitamin D was low, up their vitamin D and test again in 2 to 3 months. Don't wait 6 months. If the iodine load test was positive, do it again in 3 months. And then rerun the thyroid labs in 3 to 6 months. Critical, critical, critical that you do the reassessment. And then you tweak. You revisit the foundational thyroid support. You adjust the doses of their key supplements and herbs. You look for hidden sources of allergens and toxins. You assess for heavy metal exposure, and you do any additional functional testing as indicated. This is a detective process. You're going to put some things in place. You're going to see how they work. Then you're going to put some other things in place. That's the end of our presentation here for part three. Part four is going to go into a little bit more case study. Part four and five as well. We'll go into a little bit more case studies just so you can see the repetition, 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 which is what creates mastery. So thanks a lot for being here.